So this evening, we'll pick up in Genesis 29. Last time we were together, we went through Genesis 28 and spent a lot of time talking about Jacob and the dream that he had. So he, if you remember, he's on his way to Haran because in Genesis 27, he had stolen the blessing of his older brother Esau, and Esau was very angry. Genesis 27:41. In fact, Esau is contemplating killing his brother Jacob, and so Rebekah decides that Jacob is going to head off to her brother Laban in the region of Haran, from where they came, and so. On the way there to Haran in Genesis 28, Jacob lays down to sleep there in the latter half of that chapter. And he has the dream where there was a ladder on the earth, verse 12, its top reaching to heaven, and behold, angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And so we went through that text, and it turns out that that text was called Bethel, or the house of God. And so by the time we get to Genesis 29, Jacob now is arriving in Haran, and we'll pick up there in verse 1. So then Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the sons of the east. And he looked and saw a well in the field, and behold, three flocks of sheep were lying there beside it, for from that well they watered the flocks. Now the stone on the mouth of the well was large. When all the flocks were gathered there, they would then roll the stone from the mouth of the well and water the sheep and put the stone back in its place on the mouth of the well. And Jacob said to them, "My brothers, where are you from?" And they said, "We are from Haran." And he said to them, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" And they said, "We know him." And he said to them, "Is it well with him?" And they said, "It is well. And behold, Rachel, his daughter, is coming with the sheep." And he said, "Behold, it is still high day. It is not time for the livestock to be gathered. Water the sheep and go pasture them." But they said, "We cannot until all the flocks are gathered." And they roll the stone from the mouth of the well. Then we water the sheep. While he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. And it came about when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went up and rolled the stone from the mouth of the well and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted his voice and wept. And Jacob told Rachel that he was a relative of her father and that he was Rebekah's son. And she ran and told her father. So let's stop there for now. So Jacob arrives in Haran. And this story is not too far removed from the story that we saw in Genesis 24. Excuse me, if you remember, in Genesis 24, that was the story of Abraham sending off his servant back to his family in Haran to find a wife for Isaac. Right, so very similar type things here. So you see in verse 2 that Jacob here arrives and he sees a well. And if you go back to Genesis 24, verse 11, there's also a well that plays into the story of Isaac and Rebekah. And so in verse 3, all the flocks are gathered there, and then they would roll the stone from the mouth of the well, right, this large stone. And so Jacob, you know, he's got these sort of salutations here, verses 4 and 5, and he comes upon these people who know his family and his uncle Laban, and wants to know how he's doing. And in verse 6, it says, they said, "It is well, and behold, Rachel, his daughter, is coming with the sheep." And if you go back to 24:15, right, so Rachel's coming to meet Jacob, and in 24:15, Rebekah was coming to the well with the jar on her shoulder. Okay, so again, some parallel accounts here. In verse 7 of chapter 29, Jacob says, "Behold, it is still high day. It is not time for the livestock to be gathered. Water the sheep and go and pasture them." So Jacob kind of doesn't understand what's going on here. In verse 8, they say to him, "We cannot until all the flocks are gathered and they roll the stone from the mouth of the well. Then we water the sheep." So there's actually... we're not sure what's going on here. It's one of two things, okay? Either none of the shepherds had the strength, right? Because if you go back to verse 2, right, Moses makes a comment, "Now the stone in the mouth of the well was large." So it could be that no one of the shepherds, or two of the shepherds, as it were, could actually remove the stone from the top of the well, right? So there's this huge stone on top of the well. It's probably to make sure that, you know, either no one steals the water or whatever, keeps the water relatively pure. The other option here is that there had been among the shepherds some sort of agreement, right, that they would come and they would water together, right? So they would move the stone away together, they would water the flocks together, they would put the stone back together. And so there was some agreement, says we cannot, right? So maybe due to strength, or maybe due to that there was some sort of tribal or intertribal agreement here. It's not real clear. The language doesn't specify that. And so here comes Rachel, verse 9. She's a shepherdess, or she's kind of the head shepherd, perhaps. Perhaps she's not necessarily doing the shepherding herself, but she's sort of leading a group of younger shepherds, perhaps. And so Jacob sees Rachel coming, verse 10, and he sees the sheep. And so Jacob goes up, verse 10, and he rolls the stone from the mouth of the well. And he watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. This is interesting, at least from my perspective. This tends to tell me that the issue that we saw in verse 8 was not one of strength. Because if you remember who Jacob is, right? So if you compare Jacob and Esau, right? Jacob was kind of the homebody. Esau was kind of the outdoorsman guy, right? So it seems to me, it doesn't strike me that Jacob was sort of this he-man of a guy. So again, not real clear what's going on here, but apparently Jacob takes it upon himself to roll the stone from the mouth of the well. And he waters Rachel's sheep. And so he's obviously very excited to see her. Verse 11, he kisses Rachel, lifts his voice, and he's weeping. And then he identifies himself to Rachel as a relative of her father, that is, you know, a brother, or in this particular case, a nephew of her father, and that he was Rebekah's son. And so Rachel takes off to tell Laban. Okay? Gets a little juicier here, beginning in verse 13. So it came about, when Laban heard the news of Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. Then he related to Laban all these things. And Laban said to him, "Surely you are my bone and my flesh." And he stayed with him a month. Then Laban said to Jacob, "Because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall your wages be?" Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. And Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful of form and face. Now Jacob loved Rachel, so he said, "I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel." And Laban said, "It is better that I give her to you than that I should give her to another man. Stay with me." So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of his love for her. So Laban, if you go back to chapter 24, verse 29. So in 24:29, again, just a testimony to these parallel accounts, Laban runs out to meet Abraham's servant. He's so excited that the servant of Abraham has come to see him. And so here in verse 13, he runs again upon realizing that Jacob has come. He runs out to meet him, embraces him, kisses him, and brought him immediately into his house. And then Jacob basically tells Laban everything that has been going on. I assume he tells him why he's there. Okay. Laban says to him, "Surely you are my bone and my flesh." He stayed with him a month. And he was only supposed to be there, actually, a time, right? So if we go back to just the end of Genesis 27, beginning in verse 42. Now when the words of her elder son Esau were reported to Rebekah, she sent and called her younger son Jacob and said to him, "Behold, your brother Esau is consoling himself concerning you by planning to kill you. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice and arise, flee to Haran, to my brother Laban, and stay with him a few days until your brother's fury subsides," right? So the original intention of Jacob is to not be gone long, perhaps maybe even a few days, a short amount of time, when Rebecca then would send for him, right? Send for him to bring him back. And as we said a couple of times ago, Jacob ends up staying 20 years, actually, in Laban, and Rebecca never sees Jacob again, right? So what was intended to be a few days, what turns into a very long time, and then, of course, we'll see why. During this month, in verse 14, it says Jacob is staying with Laban for a month, and apparently he's working, right? Verse 15, "Then Laban said to Jacob, 'Because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing?'" And so obviously Jacob's taking on some work in his uncle's house, and we'll see in later chapters that a lot of that work has to do with shepherding and taking care of Laban's animals. And so he asks him, "Tell me," verse 15, "what shall your wages be?" So then we hear now about the Laban's two daughters, the older Leah, the younger Rachel. Verse 17, "Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful of form and face." So Leah's eyes being weak most likely is a euphemism for her eye color was perhaps pale. Is what that means, right? And so even in our own culture, I think, right, we have these sort of deep blue eyes or strongly brown eyes or even, you know, dark green eyes. It's sort of a feature on especially a woman's face, right, that draws us to her. And I think the euphemism here is that Leah's eyes were of a pale color and not necessarily what we would call or what in this particular culture would be beautiful. That's the contrast. And so clearly contrasting Leah with Rachel here. And so Jacob, he obviously has an eye for Rachel, the younger daughter. And so he offers to serve 7 years, verse 18, for the younger daughter, Rachel. So what is this? What's the 7 years wages? Robin answered this question last time.
Listen to my wife.
Yeah, sure. This is the dowry, right? So Jacob comes from his parents' house, and although he has the birthright and he has the blessing, he doesn't actually have either one of those things yet. And so he comes in a relatively poor condition, has nothing to give to his uncle Laban for his youngest daughter except for his service, and offers 7 years service, 7 years wages for the dowry for the younger daughter, Rachel. And in verse 19, Laban says, "It is better that I give her to you than I should give her to another man. Stay with me." And so Laban is happy to give his daughter to a relative, right? Again, this is, in that culture, very important. And so Laban agrees to the terms, or so we think, right? That's a little bit of foreshadowing. So Jacob served 7 years, verse 20, for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of his love for her. And so we would call this, quite frankly, a labor of love, right? And so I actually went off and tried to do a little research on where that phraseology, labor of love, comes from. And there's actually no definitive thing that I particularly could find, but this is clearly what Jacob is doing, right? He's laboring 7 years to earn the dowry for his uncle so that he can purchase his wife in a good and proper way, right? So this is Jacob's labor of love. Okay? in some sense, I wrote down just Romans 8:18, right? For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed to us, right? So in some sense, Jacob was looking forward to the reward, 7 years' wages, okay? All right. So here we go. Now it gets really, really interesting. Verse 21. Then Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife, for my time is completed, that I may go into her." And Laban gathered all the men of the place and made a feast. Now it came about in the evening that he took his daughter Leah and brought her to him, and Jacob went into her. Laban also gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid. So it came about in the morning that, behold, it was Leah! Exclamation point. And he said to Laban, "What is this you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served with you? Why then have you deceived me?" But Laban said, "It is not the practice in our place to marry off the younger before the firstborn. Complete the week of this one, and we will give you the other also for the service which you shall serve with me for another 7 years." And Jacob did so and completed her week, and he gave him his daughter Rachel as his wife. Laban also gave his maid Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as her maid. So Jacob went into Rachel also, and indeed he loved Rachel more than Leah, and he served with Laban for another 7 years. Now the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, and he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. And Leah conceived and bore a son, and named him Reuben, for she said, "Because the Lord has seen my affliction, surely now my husband will love me." Then she conceived again and bore a son, and said, "Because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me this son also." So she named him Simeon. And she conceived again and bore a son, and said, "Now this time my husband will become attached to me, because I have borne him 3 sons. Therefore he was named Levi." And she conceived again and bore a son. "This time I will praise the Lord." Therefore she named him Judah. Then she stopped bearing. So 7 years passes. Verse 20 says, they seemed to him but a few days because of his great love for Rachel. And at the end of the 7 years, Jacob, I assume, is keeping a detailed count of those 7 years. And when the 7 years are up and his dowry is paid, he wants to be married because of his great love for Rachel. So Laban, verse 22, throws a party. Don't know where Rachel is. Don't know where Rachel is. She sort of exits here, at least temporarily, the story. And it comes about in the evening after the big party that Laban took his daughter Leah, the older daughter, and brought her to Jacob, and Jacob went into her. So the custom, right, is on the wedding night, likely late into the night, likely dark in the night, right? No street lights, no flashlights, right? So it's pretty dark. And also most likely that the bride comes to the husband late in the night into the bedchamber, and she comes in veiled. Okay? Right? This is not foreign to us, right? We have this same sort of ritual, right, in a high church wedding ceremony. The bride comes to the husband in our culture, a very public way, right, but comes veiled, right? So it's most like, so you wonder, you know, a lot of people read this and wonder, how is this even possible, right? But it's most likely possible because of darkness, because of the custom of the veil, right? So somehow, Leah slips into bed, Jacob doesn't notice, right? And so then you got to wonder, right? There's a lot of things here in the story that are not in the text, right? I alluded to one of them. Where's Rachel? Okay. I mean, is she making demands, right? Is she bound up somewhere, you know, and gagged, not screaming, right? I don't know, right? Leah's obviously involved in the deception,
right? I don't know how we could escape that, right? It's a very, very bad situation. In 24, verse 30, I made this comment as we were going through chapter 24. The first time we meet Laban, if I pick up in 24, 28, talking of Rebekah here, now, then the girl ran and told her mother's household about these things. Now Rebekah had a brother whose name was Laban, and Laban ran outside to the man at the spring. And it came about that when he saw the ring and the bracelets on his sister's wrists, and when he heard the words of Rebekah, his sister, saying, "This is what the man said to me," he went to the man, and behold, he was standing by the camels at the spring. And I made the comment at the time that the commentators, and I think rightly, noticed that the first thing we find out about Laban, okay, in the Bible, is that his eyes were drawn to the ring and the bracelets on Rebekah's wrists. Okay, the rings on her fingers and the bracelets on her wrists, right? And I think it would have passed innocently if we hadn't read ahead. All right? Laban, what we said at the time, is a huckster. He's a deceiver, which Jacob is as well. All right? And now we see the deception of Laban in spades. Okay? It's likely that he assumes that Leah, right? He probably sees that Leah's not the pretty one, at least compared to Rachel. He wonders whether or not Leah's going to ever be married, because it's not clear. He says in verse 26, "It is not the practice in our place to marry off the younger before the firstborn." The commentators are not agreed on this, that they're not sure whether or not Laban is telling the truth or this is all part of the deception. Okay, it's not clear. Right? But this is Laban's story and he's sticking to it. In 25, of course, Jacob is angry. He says to Laban, "What is this you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served with you? Why then have you deceived me?" And this is interesting, right? Because if you go back to 27:35, this is the very same description that Isaac makes of Jacob, right? This is after the blessing has been stolen. Esau, verse 34, "He heard the words of his father. He cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry, said to his father, 'Bless me, even me also, O my father.'" Verse 35, "And Isaac said, 'Your brother came deceitfully and has taken away your blessing.'" And so now the deceit has turned on him. And he accuses Laban of the very same thing that he himself is guilty of. So Laban now has Jacob where he wants him, right? In a position of just utter weakness. And he says, verse 27, "Complete the week of this one," that is Leah, "and we will give you the other also for the service which you shall serve with me for another 7 years." Laban, because he has Jacob in a position of weakness, he demands another dowry for Rachel. Okay? Absolutely treacherous. Jacob is getting back what he has foisted upon others. And this will not be the end. Jacob will get it even more as we proceed on through the next few chapters. Okay? God's not done with Jacob here. This is sort of the first of many lessons for Jacob. So verse 28, Jacob did so. He agreed. And he completed her week, that is Leah's week. And Laban gave him Jacob his daughter Rachel as his wife per the original agreement at the same price. In verse 29, Laban also gave his maid Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as her maid. So we saw that previously as well. In verse 24, Laban also gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid. It's not clear, but there's some hint in the commentaries that perhaps Zilpah in verse 24 and Bilhah in verse 29 might actually be Laban's daughters, perhaps to a concubine. Okay, so they might actually also be Laban's daughters. So verse 30, Jacob goes into Rachel also, and indeed he loved Rachel more than Leah, and he served with Laban for another 7 years. So now we have sister rivalry. Okay. And it's not good. It's not good. This happens again and again in the Bible. Now the Lord saw, verse 31, that Leah was unloved, technically hated. Right. So in some sense, right, what comes to mind is Luke 14, right? Unless a man hates his father and his mother, cannot be my disciple. So there's clearly a relative love here. And so I think essentially in comparison to Jacob's love for Rachel, Leah was much unloved, even hated, as described literally. And the Lord, it says the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, and he, the Lord, capital H, opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. And so we see the first four children born to Jacob, who will later, remember, become Israel, the father of the 12 tribes of Israel. The first four sons born to Leah, the older sister, the one with the weak eyes. Verse 32, Leah conceived and bore a son, named him Reuben. Okay, Reuben means see a son, right? For she said, because the Lord has seen, right? Do you see that? Because the Lord has seen my affliction, surely now my husband will love me. So Reuben sounds like seen. All right, so that's where the name Reuben comes from. Verse 33, then she conceived again and bore a son and said, because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me this son also. So she named him Simeon. Simeon sounds like hearing. It's a play on the Hebrew word for hearing. So in Deuteronomy chapter 6, the famous Shema, hear, O Israel, our Lord, right, our God, the Lord is one. That word Shema means to hear, hear, O Israel. And so the name Simeon here is derived from that Hebrew word Shema, to hear. She conceived again, verse 34, bore a husband and said, now this time my husband will become attached to me because I have borne him three sons. Okay, therefore he was named Levi. And so there's a play on the word attach, right? Attached or bound. I was thinking of Ecclesiastes, right, 4:12, a cord of three strands. There's a sense in which, it's a Hebrew idiom, this three-ness is a bond or an attachment here. And so that's where the name Levi comes from. And then finally, in verse 35, she conceived again and bore a son, said, this time I will praise the Lord. Therefore, she named him Judah. Then she stopped bearing. And so Judah is a play on the word praise in the Hebrew. Okay. So thus begins the rest of the Old Testament. Frankly, the rest of the Old Testament is about the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. who becomes Israel, the 12 tribes of Israel. By the time Genesis is over, Jacob and his 12 sons will be in Egypt, which will then open up into Exodus and God's redeeming, saving this nation, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and his 12 sons, their descendants, out of Egypt, bringing them back into the land that God had promised to Abraham all the way back in Genesis 12. This truly is the beginning of the rest of the Old Testament all the way up to and through Malachi, which is the ongoing saga of God's dealing with Jacob and his descendants. Right? So this is very important. And what we are going to see as a bit of foreshadowing, right? Here's what we know about Jesus our Christ. From whom is he descended? Which tribe? He's the Lion of the tribe of
Judah.
That is right. Judah is not the firstborn of Jacob. Okay? This is significant. It's significant that Jesus Christ, the true Israel, the true vine, the true all of those things that we find in the Gospel of John and elsewhere in the New Testament, is not descended from Reuben. And the reason why is because we will see in the succeeding chapters in Genesis, not very far away, we will see that Reuben, Simeon, and Levi all do something to forfeit their claim as the rightful heir of the nation of Israel. Okay? And so Judah, the fourth-born son, right? Reuben, Simeon, Levi, will forfeit their claim to the birthright. Of course, God knows this. God knows this from the foundation of the world. Jesus Christ was the Lion of the tribe of Judah. But we will see very clearly in the history of Jacob and his sons why the first three sons were passed over. You'll see that in the narrative. Okay? So just a little bit of foreshadowing as we come through the next several chapters. Right? There are 50 chapters in Genesis, and so we're going to see this play out over the next few months as we get through this. Okay? Any questions or comments? All right, so we'll pick up next time in Genesis chapter 30.